For the Gawachan, to stand alone against all adversity is the most sacred moment of existence. The Gawachan, Abusab Analysis. The eight prisoners were dumped on the arena floor, bound and shackled. McKee stopped near them, waiting for Selang to arrive. It was not yet dawn. The ceiling above the arena remained dark. A few of the transmitter eyes around the upper perimeter glittered to reveal that they were activated. More were coming alive by the moment. Only a few of the witness seats were occupied, but people were streaming in as word was passed. The judicial bench remained empty. The outer areaway was a din of court arena security forces coming and going, people shouting orders, the clank of weapons, a sense of complete confusion there which gradually resolved itself as Bro Iledi's fellow judges up onto their bench. The witness pen was also filling, people pinching sleep from their eyes, great gaping yawns from the Gawachan. McKee looked to Broey's people, the ones who'd brought in the prisoners. He nodded for the captors to leave, giving them a Dosadi hand signal to remain available. They left. Selang passed them as she entered, still fastening her robe. She hurried to McKee's side, waited for the judges to be seated before speaking.
What is the meaning of this? My attendants!
Broey signaled McKee. McKee stepped forward to address the bench, pointed to the eight bound figures who were beginning to stir and push themselves upright. Here you see my client. Parando started to speak, but Broey silenced him with a sharp word which McKee did not catch. It sounded like frenzy. Bildoon sat in fearful fascination, unable to wrest his attention from the bound figures, all of whom remained silent. Yes, Bildoon would recognize those eight prisoners. In his limited, consentient fashion, Bildoon was sharp enough to recognize that he was in personal danger. Parando, of course, knew this immediately and watched Broey with great care. Again, Broey nodded to McKee. A fraud has been perpetrated upon this court, McKee said. It is a fraud which was perpetrated against those great and gallant people, the Gawachan. Both prosecution and defense are its victims. The law is its ultimate victim. It had grown much quieter in the arena. The observer seats were jammed, all the transmitter eyes alive. The faintest of dawn glow touched the translucent ceiling. McKee wondered what time it was. He had forgotten to put on any timepiece. There was a stir behind McKee. He glanced back, saw attendants belatedly bringing Erich into the arena. Oh, yes. They would have risked any delay to confer with Erich. Erich was supposed to be the other McKee expert. Too bad that this human who looked like McKee was no longer the McKee they thought they knew. Selang could not hold her silence. She raised a tendril for attention.
This tribunal,
McKee interrupted, is composed of three people. Only three. He allowed them a moment to digest this reminder that Gawachan trial formalities still dominated this arena, and were like no other such formalities in the consentiency. It could have been 50 judges up there on that bench. McKee had witnessed Gawachan trials where people were picked at random off the streets to sit in judgment. Such jurists took their duties seriously, but their overt behavior could lead another sentient species to question this. The Gawachan chattered back and forth, arranged parties, exchanged jokes, asked each other rude questions. It was an ancient pattern. The jurists were required to become a single organism. Gawachan had their own ways of rushing that process. But this tribunal was composed of just three judges, only one of them visibly Gawachan. They were separate entities, their actions heavy with mannerisms foreign to the Gawachan. Even Broey, tainted by Dosadi, would be unfamiliar to the Gawachan observers. No single organism here holding to the immutable forms beneath Gawachan law. That had to be deeply disturbing to the Legums who advised Selang. Broey leaned forward, addressed the arena.
We'll dispense with the usual arguments while this new development is explored.
Again, Parando tried to interrupt. Broey silenced him with a glance. I call Erich of the Running Phylum, McKee said. He turned. Selang stood in mute indecision. Her advisors remained at the back of the arena, conferring among themselves. There seemed to be a difference of opinion among them. Erich shuffled to the death focus of the arena, the place where every witness was required to stand. He glanced at the instruments of pain arrayed beneath the judicial bench, cast a wary look at McKee. The old High Magister appeared harried and undignified. That hurried conference to explore this development must have been a sore trial to the old Gowichan. McKee crossed to the formal position beside Erich, addressed the judges. Here we have Erich, High Magister of the Running Phylum. We were told that if guilt were to lie found in this arena, Erich bore that guilt. He, so we were led to believe, was the one who made the decision to imprison Dosadi. But how can that be so? Erich is old, but he isn't as old as Dosadi. Then perhaps his alleged guilt is to be found in concealing the imprisonment of Dosadi. But Erich summoned an agent of Busab and sent that agent openly to Dosadi. A disturbance among the 8 shackled prisoners interrupted McKee. Several of the prisoners were trying to get to their feet, but the lengths of the shackles were too short. On the judicial bench, Parando started to lean forward, but Broey hauled him back. Yes, Parando and others were recalling the verities of a Gowichan court arena, the constant reversals of concepts common throughout the rest of the consentiency. To be guilty is to be innocent. Thus, to be innocent is to be guilty. At a sharp command from Broey, the prisoners grew quiet. McKee continued. Erich, conscious of the sacred responsibilities which he carried upon his back, as a mother carries her tads, was deliberately named to receive the punishment blow, lest that punishment be directed at all Gowichan everywhere. Who chose this innocent High Magister to suffer for all Gowichan? McKee pointed to the 8 shackled prisoners. Who are these people? Parando demanded. McKee allowed the question to hang there for a long count. Parando knew who these 8 were. Did he think he could divert the present course of events by such a blatant ploy? Presently, McKee spoke. I will enlighten the court in due course. My duty, however, comes first. My client's innocence comes first.
One moment.
Broey held up a webbed hand. One of Selang's advisors hurried past McKee, asked and received permission to confer with Selang. A thwarted Parando sat like a condemned man watching this conversation as though he hoped to find reprieve there. Bildoon had hunched forward, head buried in his arms. Broey obviously controlled the tribunal. The advisor Legum was known to McKee, one lagag of a middling reputation, an officer out of breeding. His words to Selang were low and intense, demanding. The conference ended, Lagag hurried back to his companions. They now understood the tenor of McKee's defense. Erich must have known all along that he could be sacrificed here. The consentient covenant no longer permitted the ancient custom where the Gowichan audience had poured into the arena to kill with bare hands and claws the innocent defendant. But let Erich walk from here with the brand of innocence upon him. He would not take 10 paces outside the arena's precincts before being torn to pieces. There'd been worried admiration in the glance Lagag had given McKee in passing. Yes. Now they understood why McKee had maneuvered for a small and vulnerable judicial panel. The 8 prisoners began a new disturbance which Broey silenced with a shout. He signaled for McKee to continue. Erich's design was that I expose Dosadi, return, and defend him against the charge that he had permitted illegal psychological experiments upon an unsuspecting populace. He was prepared to sacrifice himself for others. McKee sent a wry glance at Erich. Let the High Magister try to fight in half-truths in that defense.
Unfortunately, the Dosadi populace was not unsuspecting. In fact, forces under the command of Keela Jedrick had moved to take control of Dosadi. Judge Broey will affirm that she had succeeded in this.
Again, McKee pointed to the shackled prisoners. But these conspirators, these people who designed and profited from the Dosadi experiment, ordered the death of Keela Jedrick.
She was murdered this morning on Tootlesy to prevent my using her at the proper moment to prove Erich's innocence. Judge Broey is witness to the truth of what I say. Keela Jedrick was brought into this arena yesterday only that she might be traced and killed.
McKee raised both arms in an eloquent gesture of completion, lowered his arms. Erich looked stricken. He sighed. If the 8 prisoners denied the charges, they faced Erich's fate. And they must know by now that Broey wanted them Gowichan guilty. They could bring in the Caliban contract and expose the body exchange plot, but that risked having McKee defend or prosecute them because he'd already locked them to his actual client, Erich. Broey would affirm this, too. They were at Broey's mercy. If they were Gowichan guilty, they walked free only here on Tandalore. Innocent, they died here. As though they were one organism, the 8 turned their heads and looked at Erich. Indeed. What would Erich do? If he agreed to sacrifice himself, the 8 might live. Selang, too, focused on Erich. Around the entire arena, there was a sense of collective held breath. McKee watched Selang. How candid had Erich's people been with their reeve? Did she know the full Dosadi story? She broke the silence, exposing her knowledge. She chose to aim her attack at McKee on the well-known dictum that when all else failed, you tried to discredit the opposing legum.
McKee, is this how you defend these 8 people whom only you name as client?
Selang demanded. Now it was delicate. Would Broey go along? McKee countered her probe with a question of his own. Are you suggesting that you'd prosecute these people?
I didn't charge them. You did.
To prove Erich's innocence.
But you call them client. Will you defend them?
A collective gasp arose from the cluster of advisors behind her near the arena doorway. They'd seen the trap. If McKee accepted the challenge, the judges had no choice but to bring the 8 into the arena under Gowichan forms. Selang had trapped herself into the posture of prosecutor against the 8. She'd said, in effect, that she affirmed their guilt. Doing so, she lost her case against Erich, and her life was immediately forfeit. She was caught. Her eyes glittered with the unspoken question. What would McKee do? Not yet, McKee thought. Not yet, my precious Reeve dupe. He turned his attention to Perando. Would they dare introduce the Caliban contract? The 8 prisoners were only the exposed tip of the shadowy forces, a vulnerable tip. They could be sacrificed. It was clear that they saw this and didn't like it. No Gowichan Mregs here with that iron submission to responsibility. They loved life and its power, especially the ones who wore human flesh. How precious life must be for those who'd lived many lives. Very desperate indeed. To McKee's Dosadi-conditioned eyes, it was as though he read the prisoner's thoughts. They were safest if they remained silent. Trust Perando. Rely on Broey's enlightened greed. At the worst, they could live out what life was left to them here on Tandalore, hoping for new bodies before the flesh they now wore ran out of vitality. As long as they still lived, they could hope and scheme. Perhaps another Caliban could be hired, More Petrarchies found. Erich broke, unwilling to lose what had almost been his. The High Magister's Tandalore accent was hoarse with protest.
But I did supervise the tests on Dosadi's population.
To what tests do you refer?
The Dosadi!
Erich fell silent, seeing the trap. More than 1 million Dosadi Gowichan already had left their planet. Would Erich make targets of them? Anything he said could open the door to proof that the Dosadis were superior to non-Dosadis. Any Gowichan, or human for that matter, could well become a target in the next 5 minutes. One had only to denounce a selected human or Gowichan as Dosadi. Consentient fears would do the rest. And any of his arguments could be directed into exposure of Dosadi's real purpose. He obviously saw the peril in that, had seen it from the first. The High Magister confirmed this analysis by glancing at the ferret Reeves in the audience. What consternation it would create among the secretive Reeves to learn that another species could masquerade successfully as one of their own. McKee could not leave matters where they stood, though. He threw a question at Erich. Were the original transportees to Dosadi apprised of the nature of the project?
Only they could testify to that.
And their memories were erased. We don't even have historical testimony on this matter. Erich remained silent. 8 of the original designers of the Dosadi project sat near him on the arena floor. Would he denounce them to save himself? McKee thought not. A person deemed capable of performing as the Mreg could not possess such a flaw. Could he? Here was the real point of no return. The High Magister confirmed McKee's judgment by turning his back on the tribunal, the ages-old Gowichan gesture of submission. What a shock Erich's performance must have been for those who'd seen him as a possible Mreg. A poor choice, except at the end, and that had been as much recognition of total failure as anything else. McKee waited, knowing what had to happen now. Here was Selang's moment of truth. Broey addressed her. You have suggested that you would prosecute these 8 prisoners. The matter is in the hands of Defense Legum. Broey shifted his gaze. How say you, Legum McKee? The moment to test Broey had come. McKee countered with a question. Can this court arena suggest another disposition for these 8 prisoners? Selang held her breath. Broey was pleased. He had triumphed in the end over Jedrick. Broey was certain in his mind that Jedrick did not occupy this Legum body on the arena floor. Now, he could show the puppet masters what a Dosadi born could do. And McKee saw that Broey intended to move fast, much faster than anyone had expected. Anyone except Jedrick, and she was only a silent memory in McKee's awareness. Having given the appearance of deliberation, Broey spoke. I can order these 8 bound over to consentient jurisdiction, if McKee agrees. The 8 stirred, subsided. I agree, McKee said. He glanced at Selang. She made no protest, seeing the futility. Her only hope now lay in the possible deterrent presence of the Ferret Reeves. Then I so order it, Broey said. He spared a triumphant glance for Parando. Let a consentient jurisdiction decide if these 8 are guilty of murder and other conspiracy. He was well within the bounds of the covenant between the consentiency and Gowichan, but the Gowichan members of his audience didn't like it. Their law was best. Angry whistlings could be heard all around the arena. Broey rose half out of his seat, pointed at the instruments of pain arrayed beneath him. Gowichan in the audience fell silent. They better than anyone knew that no person here, not even a member of the audience, was outside the tribunal's power. and many understood clearly now why those bloody tools had been displayed here. Thoughtful people had anticipated the problem of keeping order in this arena. Responding to the silent acceptance of his authority, Broey sank back into his seat. Perando was staring at Broey as though having just discovered the presence of a monster in this Gowichan form. Many people would be reassessing Broey now. Erich held his attitude of complete submission. Selang's thoughts almost hummed in the air around her. Every way she turned, she saw only a tangle of unmanageable tendrils and a blocked passage. McKee saw that it was time to bring matters to a head. He crossed to the foot of the judicial bench, lifted a short spear from the instruments there. He brandished the barbed, razor-edged weapon. "Who sits on this tribunal?" Once, Erich had issued such a challenge. McKee, repeating it, pointed with the spear, answered his own question. "A Gowichan of my choice, one supposedly wronged by the Dosadi Project." "Were you wronged, Broey?"
"No."
McKee faced Perando. "And here we have a human from Lirat. Is that not the case, Perando?"
"I am from Lirat, yes."
McKee nodded. "I am prepared to bring a parade of witnesses into this arena to testify as to your occupation on Lirat. Would you care to state that occupation?"
"How dare you question this tribunal?"
Perando glared down at McKee, face flushed.
"Answer his question."
It was Broey. Perando looked at Bildoon, who still sat with face concealed in his arms, face down on the bench. Something about the Panspechi repelled Perando, but he knew he had to have Bildoon's vote to overrule Broey. Perando nudged the Panspechi. Inert flesh rolled away from Perando's hand. McKee understood. Facing doom, Bildoon had retreated into the creche. Somewhere, an unprepared Panspechi body was being rushed into acceptance of that crushed identity. The emergence of a new Bildoon would require considerable time. They did not have that time. When the creche finally brought forth a functioning persona, it would not be heir to Bildoon's old powers in Busap. Perando was alone, exposed. He stared at the spear in McKee's hand. McKee favored the arena with a sweeping glance before speaking once more to Perando. "I quote that renowned expert on Gowichan law, High Magister Erich. Consentient law always makes aristocrats of its practitioners. Gowichan law stands beneath that pretension. Gowichan law asks, who knows the people? Only such a one is fit to judge in the court arena." That is Gowichan law according to High Magister Erich. That is the law in this place. Again, McKee gave Perando a chance to speak, received only silence.
"Perhaps you were truly fit to judge here," McKee suggested. "Are you an artisan? A philosopher? Perhaps you're a humorist, an artist."
"Ah, maybe you are that lowliest of workmen, he who tends an automatic machine."
Perando remained silent, gaze locked on the spear. "None of these?" McKee asked. "Then I shall supply the answer. You are a professional legalist. One who gives legal advice, even to advice on Gowichan law. You, a human, not even a legum, dare to speak of Gowichan law." Without any muscular warning signal, McKee leaped forward, hurled the spear at Perando, saw it strike deeply into the man's chest.
"One for Jedrick."
With bubbling gasp, Perando sagged out of sight behind the bench. Broey, seeing the flash of anger in McKee's effort, touched the blue box in front of him.
"Have no fear, Broey. Not yet. I still need you." But now, more than Broey knew, it was really McKee in this flesh,
not Jedrick. Those members of the Shadow Force watching this scene and able to plot would make the expected deduction because they did not know how freely and completely Jedrick and McKee had shared. To the Shadow Force, McKee would have known Perando's background. They'd trace out that mistake in short order. So this was McKee in the arena. But he'd left Dosadi. There could be only one conclusion in the plotters' minds. McKee had Caliban help. They had Caliban's to fear. And McKee thought, you have only McKee to fear. He grew aware that grunts of Gowichan approval were sounding all around the arena. They accepted him as a legum. Thus they accepted his argument. Such a judge deserved killing. Erich set the precedent. McKee improved on it. Both had found an approved way to kill a flawed judge, but McKee's act had etched a Gowichan precedent into the consentient legal framework. The compromise which had brought Gowichan and consentient law into the covenant of shared responsibility for the case in this arena would be seen by the Gowichan as a first long step toward making their law supreme over all other law. Erich had half turned, looking toward the bench, a glittering appraisal in his eyes which said the Gowichan had salvaged something here after all. McKee strode back to confront Selang. He faced her as the forms required while he called for judgment. Bildoon? Silence. Perando? Silence. Broey? Judgment. For defense. The Dosadi accent rang across the arena. The Gowichan Federation, only member of the consentiency which dared permit a victim to judge those accused of victimizing him, had received a wound to its pride. But they'd also received something they would consider of inestimable value. A foothold for their law in the consentiency, plus a memorable court performance which was about to end in the drama they loved best. McKee stepped to within striking distance of Selang, extended his right hand straight out to the side, palm up. The knife. Attendants scurried. There came the sound of the blue box being opened. Presently, the knife handle was slapped firmly into McKee's palm. He closed his fingers around it, thinking as he did so of all those countless others who had faced this moment in a Gowichan court arena. Selang, I submit to the ruling of this court. McKee saw the Ferret Reeves rise from their seats as one person. They stood ready to leap down into the arena and avenge Selang no matter the consequences. They could do nothing else but carry out the role which the Gowichan had designed for them. Few in the arena had misunderstood their presence here. No matter the measurement of the wound, the Gowichan did not suffer such things gladly. An odd look of camaraderie passed between Selang and McKee then. Here they stood, the only two non-Gowichan in the consentient universe who had passed through that peculiar alchemy which transformed a person into a legum. One of them was supposed to die immediately, and the other would not long survive that death. Yet they understood each other the way siblings understand each other. Each had shed a particular skin to become something else. Slowly, deliberately, McKee extended the tip of his blade toward Selang's left jowl, noting the myriad pocks of her triad exchanges there. She trembled, but remained firm. Deftly, with the swiftest of flicking motions, McKee added another pock to those on her left jowl. The Ferret Reeves were the first to understand. They sank back into their seats. Selang gasped, touched a tendril to the wound. Many times she had been set free by such a wound, moving on to new alliances which did not completely sunder the old. For a moment, McKee thought she might not accept, but the increasing sounds of approval all around the arena overcame her doubts. The noise of that approval climbed to a near deafening crescendo before subsiding.
Even the Gowichan joined this. How dearly they loved such legal nuances. Pitching his voice for Selang alone, McKee spoke.
You should apply for a position in BUSAP. The new director would look with favor upon your application.
You?
Maker Reeve bet on it. She favored him with the grimace which passed for a smile among Reeves, spoke the traditional words of Triad farewell.
We were well and truly wed.
So she, too, had seen the truth in their unique closeness. McKee betrayed the extent of his esoteric knowledge by producing the correct response. By my mark, I know you. She showed no surprise. A good brain there. Not up to Dosati standards, but good. Well, and truly wed. Keeping a firm lock on his emotions, the Dosati in him helped, McKee crossed to confront Erich. Client Erich, you are innocent. McKee displayed the fleck of Reeve blood on the knife tip. The forms have been obeyed, and you are completely exonerated. I rejoice with all of those who love justice. At this point in the old days, the jubilant audience would have fallen on the hapless client, would have fought for bloody scraps with which to parade through the city. No doubt Erich would have preferred that. He was a traditionalist. He confirmed that now.
I am glad to quit these times, McKee.
McKee mused aloud. Who will be the Mreg now that you're disqualified? Whoever it is, I doubt he'll be as good as the one he replaces. It will profit that next Mreg to reflect upon the fragile and fugitive value to be gained from the manipulation of others. Glowering, Erich turned and shambled toward the doorway out of the arena. Some of the Gowichan from the audience already were leaving, no doubt hoping to greet Erich outside. McKee had no desire to witness that remnant of an ancient ritual. He had other concerns. Well, and truly wet. Something burned in his eyes, and still he felt that soft and sleeping presence in his awareness.
Jedrick?
No response. He glanced at Broey, who, true to his duty as a judge, would be the last to leave the arena. Broey sat blandly contemplating this place where he'd displayed the first designs of his campaign for supremacy in the consentiency. He would accept nothing less short of his own death. Those shadowy puppet masters would be the first to feel his rule. That fitted the plan McKee and Jedrick had forged between them. In a way, it was still the plan of those who'd bred and conditioned Jedrick for the tasks she'd performed so exquisitely. It was McKee's thought that those nameless, faceless Dosatis who stood in ghostly ranks behind Jedrick had made a brave choice. Faced with the evidence of body exchange all around, they'd judged that to be a deadly choice. The conservatism of extinction. Instead, they'd trusted sperm and ova, always seeking the new and better, the changed, the adapted. And they'd launched their simultaneous campaign to eliminate the patriarchies of their world, reserving only that one for their final gamble. It was well that this explosive secret had been kept here. McKee felt grateful to Selang. She'd known. But even when it might have helped her, she'd remained silent. BUSAB would now have time to forge ways of dealing with this problem. Selang would be valuable there. And perhaps more would be learned about Panspechi, Calibans, and Tapriciots.
If only Jedrick.
He felt a fumbling in his memories.
If only Jedrick what?
She spoke laughingly in his mind, as she'd always spoken there. McKee suppressed a fit of trembling, almost fell.
Careful with our body, she said. It's the only one we have now.
Whose body?
She caressed his mind. Ours, love.
Was it hallucination? He ached with longing to hold her in his arms, to feel her arms around him, her body pressed to him. That's lost to us forever, love. But see what we have in exchange. When he didn't respond, she said, "One can always be watching while the other acts or sleeps. But where are you? Where I've always been when we exchanged. See?"
He felt her parallel to him in the shared flesh, and as he voluntarily drew back, he came to rest in contact with her mutual memories, still looking from his own eyes, but aware that someone else peered out there too, that someone else turned this body to face Broey. Fearful that he might be trapped here, Mickey almost panicked, but Jedrick gave him back the control of their flesh.
"Do you doubt me, love?"
He felt shame. There was nothing she could hide from him. He knew how she felt, what she'd been willing to sacrifice for him. "You'd have made their perfect Mreg.
Don't even suggest it."
She went pouring through his arena memories then, and her joy delighted him.
"Oh, marvelous, McKee. Beautiful. I couldn't have done it better.
And Broey still doesn't suspect." Attendants were taking the 8 prisoners out of the arena now, all of them still shackled. The audience benches were almost empty. A sense of joy began filtering through McKee.
"I lost something, but I gained something. You didn't lose as much as Erich,
and I gained more." McKee permitted himself to stare up at Broey then, studying the Gowichan judge with Dosadi eyes and 2 sets of awareness. Erich and the 8 accused of murder were things of the past. They, and many others like them, would be dead or powerless before another 10-day. Broey already had shown the speed with which he intended to act. Supported by his troop of Jedrick-chosen aides, Broey would occupy the seats of power, consolidating lines of control in that shadow government, eliminating every potential source of opposition he could touch. He believed Jedrick dead, and while McKee was clever, McKee and Busab were not a primary concern. One struck at the real seats of power. Being Dosadi, Broey could not act otherwise. And he'd been almost the best his planet had ever produced. Almost. Jedrick within chuckled. Yes, with juggernaut certainty, Broey would create a single target for Busab. And Jedrick had refined the simulation pattern by which Broey could be anticipated. Broey would find McKee waiting for him at the proper moment. Behind McKee would be a new Busab, an agency directed by a person whose memories and abilities were amplified by the one person superior to Broey that Dosadi had ever produced. Standing there in the now silent arena, McKee wondered, when will Broey realize he does our work for us?
When we show him that he failed to kill me.
In the purest obedience to Gowichan forms, without any sign of the paired thoughts twining through his mind, McKee bowed toward the surviving jurist, turned, and left. And all the time, Jedrick within was planning, plotting, planning. This concludes the Dosadi experiment. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers, or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.